This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Well, good morning. I almost feel like yawning here. This is the 25th day of the convention.
Of the four-day convention.
Here early in the morning, and it was a late night last night. You were up having a cocktail after hours.
A couple of cocktails with friends, yes.
That's a great thing about Las Vegas is that it is a 24/7.
Oh, yeah, you could have cocktails at 6 a.m. if you want. I mean, I don't.
What do you mean, if you want? I thought that was mandatory here.
Oh, no.
But, well, it depends upon your
gotta
day.
You got to pace yourself, and I've already been warned by my wife. I better get a little bit of sleep because I need to function when I get home.
Oops, then you better take another day.
Exactly.
Tell her the convention's over on Wednesday instead of Tuesday. You know?
Nah, it doesn't work. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah. Well, anyhow, we did have another full day of activities, and that I've got with me again Mark D'Souza here early this morning before things get kicked off for the day to chat about some of the activities we had yesterday. And so I think where we left off with you, we just finished with Henry Evans' lecture, I think.
Exactly, yeah. That was the first event yesterday. Great lecture. And then he was followed by like the polar opposite, 180 degrees, Rudy Kobe. Not equality.
It's frenetic.
It's just the subject matter. And Rudy said this was like a one-time-only lecture because he was doing his show, he had all the illusions with him, and they figured out all the logistics, so they were able to get actually some of the illusions down from the one theater to the other so that he could use them and demo the stuff in the lecture and talk about it while showing you the stuff. And boy, what a lecture that was. It was just a great lecture on creating character, developing material, just changing things, modifying effects, making them look different, making them feel different. It was pretty good lecture, I got to tell you.
Well, you and I had heard his lecture before, which is how to become a world famous magician. Right. But he lives in Las Vegas, so he can bring the things down here and say, here is exactly, not just can I show you a video of what I do, but he actually had the physical things. Plus, he had the, it was kind of cool that he had, wasn't Nikki Terminator? One of his assistants, I guess.
Yeah,
it was Spencer Horseman's wife.
Exactly. Yeah. So that Caroline.
Caroline.
So he dragged her up out of the audience so that she could actually do the whole thing with him, and it was great fun and great ideas. I mean, for anybody who just has never heard the stuff, it's stuff you got to hear.
That's true. Yeah, and I think the bottom line you can take away from there is creativity. In other words, be your own person. Find you. And he said, you know, don't use this big wheel of death or whatever that I've got because I've done this, but use that as an idea that you can bounce off to something that you can create.
Exactly. Utilize your persona, your style, and make things work for you.
So it didn't have to be for stage. It'd be on close-up as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's any kind of magic you do.
You should kind of transcend that from one thing to another as you're listening to his lecture. So next after that, we had the
Fool Us auditions. They split it up into two sessions. Matt Donnelly hosted the thing. Matt is a multitasker. He's a writer. He's a writer on the Fool Us show. He's with Penn on Penn's Sunday School podcast. He's with Piff on Piff's podcast. He tours with Piff occasionally.
And he has his own podcast.
And now he's doing the Penn and Friends show because Teller's recuperating from back surgery. Very bright, very talented guy, and did a great job of hosting. And they had two of the producers of the Fool Us show there coming up between acts and talking about Fool Us, what they look for. They're thinking on putting the shows together. It was great. I mean, for anybody who's ever, who even if you just watch the show, it gives you great insight as to what goes on behind the scenes.
Because they're going into their seventh season, they were talking about some of the trials and tribulations they'd had early on and how that it first got started and how that they were rejected by the networks and then they were able to sell it in the UK.
Exactly.
It was successful there and came over and how they got Allison to come in. There were so many little details and things that they talked about. This like, hey, hurry up, whoever's doing the magic, I want to hear what these guys have to say.
Absolutely. And for anybody who's ever had a thought of going on Fool Us, and they put it out there that if you want to submit something, here's how you submit it. We'd love to see your submissions.
Yeah.
It was great.
Another thing is that he was talking about just having like a 90-second kind of thing. Remember the Gong Show? Of course.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which was kind of like, I think, where that America's Got Talent, where that you have the X's instead of the gongs, but basically, and the same thing with America's Got Talent, you have 90 seconds, you have a little bit longer time, but.
Yeah, but there's a big difference between the Gong Show and America's Got Talent. I mean, the Gong Show was meant to be funny. With Fool Us, it's a totally different vibe. You're not getting X'd, but they're looking for guys that can do, and women, who can do what they need to do in 5 minutes or less. Mm-hmm. That's the chunk. And, you know, like there were some presentations we saw yesterday that if they were chosen to participate in the show, they're going to get edited. And, right. and rightfully so. I mean, there was a lot of, you know, some of the acts, there was a lot of fluff there that was meaningless. So
that was one of the things also I thought was interesting where he was talking about how that you would have people would be so nervous, you know, whenever they come in. First of all, how they treat them nice, you know, and they have a great buffet. Whenever,
exactly, you know, get a buffet.
That's right, and the room would put them up in, et cetera. But everybody, obviously, would be focused on that time that you're going to have in front of the camera. But you have a live or practice, you know, and everything beforehand and get everything all right for right. The cameras. And then also a little bit of coaching and saying, hey, you might trim
it's
this down.
It's not just a little bit of coaching. Right. There's a lot of coaching.
So in other words, you and I might have a particular act, but they might hone this down. And actually, they give you some excellent production directions on, you know, maybe take the stage, cut this out a little bit because we need for time to tighten this or that. And then afterwards to be able to talk to Allison, you know, before millions of people who are watching, and people don't think about that.
Yeah, because they're watching Penn and Teller's lips moving trying to figure out if they figured it out or not.
Yes.
But you need to be present with Allison because that's just as much a part of the show as what you just
exactly.
did.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And people don't think about that necessarily because they're, as you would imagine, after a show, you know, you think, well, I'm in front
of
all these people.
It was interesting. I'm not going to mention names or anything, but one of the competitors spoke to me afterwards. I know this person, and told me they really liked my personality, they really liked what I did, but they felt it needed to be, there needed to be a couple of modifications, and they told me what they felt, there were some weaknesses, that, and said, if you can clean this up, send us another tape in a week, because we'd love to have you on.
Yeah.
So, you know, that I think it was all very, very positive, as the show always is.
Right.
But I think everybody involved with that production wants to put the best magic out there possible. And that was really
right.
what they were trying to tell us yesterday. They want to be the cheerleaders.
And this
magic.
Is so different from any other kind of reality show. Absolutely. Or any other kind of contest show like American Idol or America's Got Talent or whatever else, in which that it does feature magic in a good, positive light.
Absolutely.
And then also, it's interesting, I think, about how that the guys backstage, that is, I guess, Mike Close and others, are listening in on the conversations that Penn and Teller are having during that, although they're not giving them any information.
Well, what they said was there are two people that are listening to that conversation, and it's Mike Close and it's one of the producers.
Mm-hmm.
And they're,
it used to be Johnny.
It used to be Johnny, yeah. But they're listening to determine, did they get fooled or didn't they get fooled? And there were instances where they thought they didn't get fooled, and it turned out they did get fooled, and they called it back and said, we need to retape this because you actually did fool them. So it was, and the person was Vinny Grosso.
Yes.
At least one of them. So
yes, right.
That was pretty funny.
I thought that was just phenomenal to hear that insight and background about what they do. And how, anyhow, so that was one of the
Competitors, there were eight or nine. There were nine people who auditioned, and quite a variety. And, you know, I know at least one of them's getting on.
Exactly. It was from illusions to close-up and mentalism and everything in between.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Card tricks every once in a while.
Yeah. Well, that was another thing. He said that of all the shows they've done over the last, this coming in the seventh season, I think he said 25% are
25% are card tricks. They want other stuff. That doesn't mean they don't want cards, but 25% can be card tricks because people are going to get bored.
Yeah. And I remember when I was talking with Nathan Coe Marsh, and if you go back and listen to that podcast and his experience with that, he was saying that he had prepped for that by watching a lot of AGT beforehand, so this way he kind of had an idea about what to expect and how the contestants were. In other words, that you don't argue with them. It's like, you know, I think you got us. You know, that you don't want to say, well, no, wait a minute, you don't get that, you know, because they might cut that completely.
There have been performances there that have never aired.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they tape more than they actually air. There have been things that didn't air because they've tried to argue with them.
Well, for a variety of reasons. Harrison Greenbaum was talking about it.
Yeah.
He said they taped it and didn't play it, but
for
other reasons.
And other reasons, yeah. And rightfully so. But, yeah,
not for prime time. So anyhow, after we had the two sessions of that, what else?
Right, and then we had a little break, and then we went into the banquet, and then the Matt King roast. I can tell you, the banquet, you know, just thinking about just staying in the hotel and having rubber chicken for dinner is just, you know, and having to pay extra for it. It does not appeal to a lot of people, but I knew it was going to be, you know, kind of a fun event. And kudos to the hotel. The food was good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was one of the better rubber chickens I've had. But it was so funny because on every table, the centerpiece was a goldfish bowl. So it had goldfish in it with a little bear. and the bear was wandering around during the cocktail hour and taking pictures with people. It was very, very funny.
And the goldfish boat was sitting on a plaid...
It was sitting on a plaid placemat, yeah, which I thought it would be nice to take those home and make egg bags out of them.
And a nice touch was the raincoat.
Mention that. That's just, oh, no, everybody got a cloak of invisibility. They
signed.
Had custom-made cloak of invisibility that was signed, hand-signed by Mac, and boy, was that cool. Boy, was that cool.
And so, speaking of Vinny Grosso, hey, Vinny, just want to say hi.
Yeah, I'll be over. Yeah, we'll be.
Well, say hello.
We'll be done hello. In 5 minutes. It's Vinny Grosso.
Yeah,
speaking of the devil.
Speaking of Vinny, that's right. So he's kind of in and out. So after we had that, it was next.
Right, the roast itself, and that will change the face of Magic Conventions forever. it was definitely over 18. It was very, very liberal, and the guys just tore the hell out of each other as much as they tore it out of Mac, and it was because they're all friends, and I mean it was raw, it was rough, and it was hysterical.
I think if you would go back, it was very much like the Dean Martin early roasts they used to have, certainly. And you see these things then that are now modern. I'm trying to think, on Comedy Central. I mean, from the very get go, that with Mike Hammer as the MC, I mean, he set
oh,
the
boy,
tone.
Was he good?
Yeah, he was.
Oh
excellent.
Boy, was he a great MC!
Yeah.
Oh my God! But everybody, I mean, they had on the Amazing Jonathan, Harris Greenbaum, Chris Kenner, Piff was. Oh, my gosh, that was hysterical. Derek Hughes, Nick DeFott, Bargatze, Fielding West. I mean, it was an all-star dice. And then from the audience, Penn Jillette came up and did a bit. And then a fellow who is like the entertainment reporter here in town.
Johnny Katz.
Yeah, Johnny Katz came up and did some shtick. And it was really funny.
That was a memorable thing. That's a one-off that will never be
done.
Repeated.
Well, I'd asked Mike Miller. I said, I think we should do this every year.
Yeah.
He said no.
No. You know, that Mac is the king. And afterwards that there was a...
Oh, my God. They had made this throne, this gaudy throne that he was sitting on. And that was the surprise. They said, well, we wanted to get you a gift, and we know how you love Adirondack chairs. So we asked Lupe Nielsen if she could make one for you. And they take the cover of this thing. He'd been sitting on it all night. It was magnificent custom-made Adirondack chair with inlay of that looked like his plaid jacket in one mm-hmm. section, and then goldfish.
On the
it
arm,
was,
yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it was beautiful. Beautiful.
An ergonomic.
And it was, it was an ergonomic chair. So, you know, he doesn't have to worry about throwing his back out while he's sitting outside. You know, quaffing a cocktail or whatever.
That's right. Well, that was excellent. A lot of fun after. And then after that, they kind of cleared the room.
Right.
And then we came back.
We had the Comedy Cabaret Show. Scott Alexander hosted. Scott does a wonderful job.
Had an original song, you know, kind of as an MC.
Absolutely. And his material is just, it's great material. And I'm lucky. I get to see Scott every year. I mean, he lives like an hour from me. And he works the Pennsylvania Ren Fair every year. So my kids and I go up for that every year so we can get to see Scott. There were some great performers on Fielding West opened and did his classic stuff. You know, Bob the Bird and the newspaper and all that. And a nice crisp set. Eric Buss did some really funny stuff.
Yeah.
He's such an original thinker in comedy magic. And
finished up with the Looper.
Exactly. Yeah, the bit that he had done where he'd won the originality award actually for that routine, and he's changed a little bit, but you know, combining sound effects with a looping machine and doing magic with it is just really very cool. Michael Holly, terrific juggler here in town, very commercial stuff, very funny, and of course the juggler always steals the show. And they wisely finished with Harrison Greenbaum. So we've gotten to see a lot of Harrison this weekend. But he did my favorite two pieces, which are his Price of Right piece, which you know he's done on TV, and it's so funny. But then this rant he does at the end. I wait for that, and it's just it's crying funny, and it just gets sometimes it's. Sometimes it's sicker and funnier than us. But he was, you know, aware of where he was. one little F-bomb, little slipped out, and he tried to correct himself. Yeah. But he didn't think we noticed.
But we could see him biting his tongue. Throughout.
Exactly.
Yeah,
but he was, Harrison was pretty much on best behavior during the show. Yeah. And I mean, he's such a pro. He knows his stuff. He knows when he can and when he can't.
It was a good day of activities. A lot of great things, happened. And so now we're starting for a whole new day of different things. In fact, talk about Harrison, that he's actually slipped that in as an additional thing for the members.
Yeah, it was really so nice of him to do. He offered to do his lecture, which, you know, this is one of those magic lectures where there's no magic tricks, and thank God for that. You don't need it. He lectures on comedy, and it's on comedy. It's how to add comedy to magic, but the focus is on comedy, and it's emphasizing, you know, be original and don't steal, and here's how to think about writing comedy. And it's phenomenal, and I would recommend everybody sees this lecture. I've seen it like 3 times already. It's phenomenal.
We're just speaking of which, that there's a new book that Nick DeFatt has out.
yes, funny. Nick is just this rising star of magic. He is.
Speaking of rising star, which is another funny line that Chris Kenner had said, or somebody had said about this is a book that Nick DeFatt had written after his. Many year of experience.
And somebody else made the good. Yeah, Nick DeFatt's book, Too Soon. very, very good book on comedy. And there's a couple of tricks in there, which are very good tricks, mind you. But, you know, it's...
You'd recommended that to me yesterday, and I just happened to see it in the dealer room, and I saw him and had him sign it.
Oh, absolutely. It was. It's a great book. It's a great book, and it's almost out of print already.
Yeah.
And it literally came out a week ago.
Yeah, so, it's called Funny.
Funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't forget that title.
Mark, thanks very much.
My pleasure, Scott.
And maybe if we might have a chance before the day is out.
Or maybe
tomorrow
after the show tonight.
Have a late night cocktail.
So. Yeah, I'm out of here. I've got an 8:30 flight tomorrow morning, so it's back to the real world.
Real world?
Real world.
What is that?
That is the, yeah.
So once again, there's my buddy giving us another recap of yesterday's activities. And so until later, that was Mark D'Souza. Scotty out. So, as we start out this morning with the, let's go in here where maybe the, got some carpeting at least as well. We start out this morning on the final day of the convention here in Las Vegas and up in the presidential suite with the SAM National President, Steve Spence. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
It's been a wonderful convention. It's starting to wind down a little bit. It's probably been pretty hectic for you then as well, but have you been enjoying yourself here in Vegas?
Oh, yes. It's a lot of fun. As you can expect, it's been hectic, as you said, for me, so I haven't been able to totally enjoy all of the activities that all the members have been able to do because I've been running from one activity to another, but I've enjoyed it.
That's kind of like with Mark Whitehouse. Whenever I was talking with him also, he said, okay, we can talk, but I got to run over here. And I know even for different activities that he'll just be here for a few moments and got to check on something else.
Yes, that's true.
It was interesting. I know that we've had this in Las Vegas before. What was the thought behind having it in the winter rather than the summer? I've got some thoughts, but what are your thoughts?
Well, to be honest, the original reason was we had it scheduled in the summer, and we Magic Live was supposed to be alternating years, and we had scheduled for a year that was not on the schedule for Magic Live, and then they decided to do it annually, and we would have been 1 week before Magic Live.
Well, that makes perfect sense, yeah.
And so we were able to shift it into January, and it's turned out to be a good experience. It was an experiment we've been hearing for years from our professional members that, I'd love to come, but I can't come in the summertime. That's my busy time of the year. And January is not the busy time of year for the professional performers. And so this was a little bit of an experiment, and it's turned out well.
It has been, I think, you know what, with over 600 people that we've had here registered for the convention. And besides that, it's a cooler time of the year, you know.
Yes.
And even though it's a cool heat, it's not like it's a dry coolness as opposed to a dry heat that we have here.
Yes.
But it is certainly enjoyable. Another thing is that I was talking with Mark about, Mark Whitehouse, who's the convention chairman, about the little bit of overlap with the Magi Fest in Columbus, and that, again, they had apparently tried to do this in so far in advance, but they, at the last minute, they being Magi Fest, had to change at the last minute. Well, they had to change last year for the hotels, and so they had a new venue, and the only time it was the same weekend, so unfortunately. But there were a lot of people I've noticed who are here who flew directly, you know, on Sunday following the convention.
Yes, that is true, and we hope in 2 years, in 2022, when we have it back in Las Vegas, that we won't be overlapping with Magi Fest.
And everybody gets settled.
Yes. Yeah.
What's been one of the things that you have enjoyed most about this convention?
Meeting the members. I've been traveling this past 6 months as president to the various assemblies, and I've always enjoyed that. And here, there's a concentrated mass of members, so it's been easy to meet and make new friends in the Magic community.
Right. Yeah, the travel part, I think, is the most fun about being international president, because you do get to go to a lot of other conventions, which, again, is a unique thing, because that you're not actually changing the medal until 6 months from now. I mean, you're still just as far as the regular schedule, I guess, that we're on. You know.
Yes, this is, as in sporting events, where on football, this is the first time of this. Well, this is the first time for the Society of American Magicians.
And you're going to be going to Blackpool, I guess, and still more conventions for the next 6 months.
Yes, and 2.5 weeks, I think it is, I'll be in Blackpool visiting some of our members and the Magic Circle. Looking forward to that. And then I have a full schedule of visiting. We have a tour going to NEMCON up in New England and meeting five different assemblies. And then we're going out to Utah and going across the country.
What's happening in Utah?
They're having a Hall of Fame, Magic Hall of Fame for magicians of Utah, and they're going to be inducting some members there, and then just going and meeting a couple of the assemblies out there.
One of the things, by the way, that is unique, so many differences between the IBM and the SAM, but the SAM has a physical Hall of Fame also. I remember it used to be there in California, and then there was some sort of a thing. There was a PCP problem, I think. And that's all been resolved, and where is it now? People can go and visit.
Well, they are. I was just informed by the president of the Hall of Fame that they have two leads. It's been a hard process in Los Angeles finding some space that is acceptable, that doesn't cost two arms and legs at the same time. So they have an opportunity to currently, and it's the hope that within the next 6 months that there'll be actually a physical space. What they've been doing, they've stored the materials and taken them on the road with exhibits. They don't have a physical location right now for the space, but they hope within this year to have that.
Okay, good. No, I knew that they had that, and I knew things had been in storage, and I was curious about whether that had opened yet.
It hasn't been resolved totally, but I understand they're very close.
But I know that there were some new people who were just inducted this year into the Hall of Fame.
Yes, we had Jeff McBride, Eugene Berger, and then last night, Matt King.
Yeah, which, by the way, that was so much fun last night with the roast. That was unique also, another experience.
Yes, it was. We have tried. This has been Mark Whitehouse and his team have done a fantastic job. We feel sorry that even more members didn't come, but we're pleased with the people who are here because they missed a lot. And you asked me what the highlight was, and I think the highlight will be tonight the Chinese gold medalists that are coming to perform, because they're fantastic.
Well, you know, I think the three amigos that you've got are tremendous. You know, Mark Whitehouse and Vinnie Grasso and Mike Miller, you know, are all past presidents as well, but being such good friends, and that they work so well together, and they also have their unique skill sets, I guess, you know.
Yes. Yeah,
with the people they know and people they brought in and everything, of course, with Vinnie being able to work with Penn & Teller Foolis and all the rest of the, you know, being here in Vegas and bringing this all together that he did with the roast last night, and then with Mark bringing in, you know, the Chinese and the people that he's known, you know, as the talent chairman. It's just, you know, been a perfect, a really good convention on so many different levels.
Yes, you know. Yes. I think the big complaint will be the elevators, but I have not been to a magic convention that is on a high rise that has not had elevator problems.
Elevator issues.
Yes.
Other than that, it's a very nice hotel and a nice city, nice time of the year, and I think it's a good choice of kind of moving this, because there are so many other conventions throughout the rest of the year. Traditionally, the Magi Fest has been the kickoff for conventions, and so this could be another one that would be the Western kickoff. You know, the people maybe don't have to travel as far, you know, or maybe still, I think, can go to both, because they're both, again, unique as well.
Yeah. Yes. So it's a very different.
One last thing, and that has to do with the SYM. How's the growth coming along, and what are you doing to inspire youth to attend?
Well, it's going fine. We had just chartered a new assembly this year in our assemblies here in one Hawaii, and we're hoping to have one here in Las Vegas shortly. Mm-hmm. So it's going very well. We're very proud of our child protection policy and regimen that we've instituted in the past year. We think it's leading the industry in the magic community.
I think it is, too, because I think it's wonderful that you have a certification, even a class you could take here to be certified to work with youth. And I think that that is perfect. If you're going to work with any young people, scouts, church, hospitals, you know, let alone birthday parties and everything else, to have that certification, I think it's just one extra thing that puts you above others. You
yes,
know?
And Dan Rodriguez, the head of the SYM, the director, he informed me yesterday, I guess it was, that we'd certified over 100 adults in the past year.
That's great.
Prior to the convention, and I expect after the convention there's quite a few more.
Yeah, because they're actually going to be having that here. So there's a way of being certified online?
Yes, there. You can go to magicsam.com, and there's buttons within SYM to go to the certification, and there's an online training course, as well as you have to have, of course, a background check and all the criteria are set forth there.
Yeah, that's great. Well, listen, I know that it's starting to get busy over here, and I'm going to let
yes.
you go. Thank you.
Okay, thank
and
you.
So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was President Steve Spence, Scotty out. This morning, I've got somebody that I've been wanting to talk to for a long time, and we seem to be going at different parts of the world, which is interesting because – and then with Kayla Drescher. First of all, hello, Kayla.
Hi.
And we are she's a fellow podcaster then as well, of course, with Shazam, along with Carissa Hendricks. And that I was starting to say, I always find it fascinating that our paths don't cross more than they do because of our similar interests, obviously, and the subject of our podcast, in which I go to a lot of conventions, and you're always busy doing other things.
That's
keeping
true.
That's right. Like you've been working with the Illusionist, or what was it?
Champions of Magic.
Okay.
Yeah, so the show is kind of like The Illusionists, but there's five cast members, and we've been the same cast and really the same crew for the last 2 years. So there's no like plug and play sort of situation. So the difference between sort of us and The Illusionists, we also are never gonna, we're not like Kevin James or Mark and Ginger. Like, we're not of that caliber mm-hmm. of insanely genius magic, but what we have is the five of us actually are like a family. We've really gotten really close. We travel for the better part of the year together. And so on stage, actually all five of us do two whole pieces together mm-hmm. Where we try to accomplish magic using our special skills, but all together at the same time. And then sort of we're working towards that being basically that will be a good chunk of the show, is that there will always be like 2, 3, 4, 5 cast members on stage at the same time. So we're really lucky in that regard.
Is it like a bus tour in which that you would get on a bus and you kind of go from place to place so that you got different cities, or that you have a lot of spaces in between, or what?
Yeah, sometimes. So it's kind of a combination, depends on what kind of shows we have. So mm-hmm. our show's pretty big. We try to only do runs where we're in a place for at least more than a day. It takes the whole day to load it in, and until 1, 2 o'clock in the morning to load it out. So it is pretty intense. So sometimes we're on a bus where we do one-offs. So we sleep while we're driving to the next city, which means that in the morning we have no idea where we are. There are many times I've walked into a Starbucks asking, can you please tell me what city I'm in? Especially when traveling like in the UK, yeah. I had no idea and no cell phone service. Mm-hmm. And so I just attempted to figure out life. And then other times we're in a hotel for a week, or sometimes we have a couple days off, so we'll all get an Airbnb and get to hang out, and it's really fun. So it's kind of a combination, depends on what schedule we have for sure.
What's your most fun place that you visited so far?
I loved Edinburgh. That was my favorite. And it's the Edinburgh audiences are so highly educated in terms of theater because they have the Fringe Festival.
Fringe Festival, sure.
Absolutely. So the show, you know, we definitely had to tailor some things, but actually I really enjoyed that because it made me push my ability to perform in order to satisfy a well-educated audience. And I think I grew from that experience, but I just love Scotland. It was amazing. What a country. It's beautiful and people are great. And I would live there genuinely. I would live in Edinburgh.
That's funny you say that, because that's what my wife had always said too. Of all the places we visit around the world, she said, I'd like to move. If I was going to live someplace outside the U.S., it'd be Scotland. Just
yes.
absolutely love it. People are great. The location, and it's wonderful.
And great coffee. And that's usually my stipulation on if I want to live somewhere.
You judge a country by its coffee. And that's interesting.
Absolutely.
But you're going to Starbucks. Starbucks is the same. It's like French fries and McDonald's. They're the same from New York to San Francisco.
If I can avoid Starbucks at all costs, I try to.
You go to a local. Like, I do, too. I like to find a little, not a diner, but someplace that's a local coffee shop.
Yeah, I usually do a Google search for who has oat milk. And then I'm like, ah, that's going to be the coffee shop I go to. I want it to be, I want like weird things as the decor, like a bicycle wheel and an old wine bottle and good coffee that's brewed. You know, it's just, I love that. So yeah, absolutely. Local places.
That's fun. Back to podcast then again, that yours is, you have like seasons as opposed to like, you know, one after they're not released on a regular basis. Is that right?
Yeah, we kind of did that on accident mainly because, both Carissa and I are going, and we don't have time to line up, and which is why for the second season we took a little break, and then we did season two, and season two has been every episode except one has been interviews. Mm-hmm. And the reason we did that is because we just didn't have the time to sit down together. And so there's one episode where we finally got to see each other. It had been months since we even saw each other. So it's just difficult. But what we did is try to do interviews while we're on the road. So I would try to interview somebody. Carissa did a lot of interviews, which was amazing. And so it was just a one-on-one situation. But mm-hmm. it ended up working great because it was still good content. But we're excited for hopefully in season three we'll be back a lot together. We're going to be doing a lot of recording over the next month, so that'll be fine. But we'll wrap up season two in a little bit, and then we'll have episode 50, and then season three will come out.
So you have 25 per season, basically.
Sure.
Okay.
I know.
Sounds good.
Like I said, it was kind of an accident that we did seasons, and so we didn't really plan it. Mm-hmm. But also, we're both so new to podcasts that we kind of just go with the flow. We have no idea what's going on.
And it takes a while.
You get it. Yeah, I mean, you're at 500, right?
Over 500.
That's amazing. I'm just excited. I'm like, 50 is so cool.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to, I have a little goal, which is I'm really excited for episode 100. I don't know what that will look like, but it just feels like an accomplishment. What was it?
There's a milestone, too.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, 500 eventually are just like, oh, I got another milestone.
That's true. It's kind of difficult to figure out who, but at each of those points, I've tried to think, well, who would be interesting to have for this milestone? At 500, I had Uri Geller, which was
cool.
Great. You know, prior to that, I think it was David Berglas that I had for 400, and I think maybe Tom Mullica for 300. I'd forgotten 100 and 200 that was, but.
That's so cool.
I think it was amazing. Paul Daniels. Now I think about that for
really?
Number 200, yeah.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
But, it just takes a while, I was going to say someday if you were a man, then you'd have a beard gray like me.
Sure. I'm hoping that's not going to happen. But if it does, hey, I'll embrace it because it'll look great.
Mrs. Claus.
Exactly.
Well, listen, I know we have something else we got to run to here right now. But for those who are not familiar with Shazam and are listening to the podcast, they should be listening to this because there's plenty of room in the cyberspace for all of our podcasts because we are so unique. We each have our own voice, just as magicians have different performance styles you can teach professor's nightmare and you do it differently from me or whatever. And the same thing with the podcast that, mine is really like what we're doing. I have no agenda. It's just a conversation with conjurers, basically. And people are just eavesdropping on our private conversations. And yours has a unique perspective from the distaff side.
Yeah, basically Shazam came about because I had an experience, and multiple experiences, but one specifically that I went, oh, things are happening in this community. I know they always have happened in this community and others, that the minorities of the community are struggling, and I just didn't want to have to deal with that anymore. So I approached Carissa, and Carissa is my good friend, and so it made sense that she would be the one I wanted to do this with. And Shazam was born, and our topics, they have a wide range of stuff. But the goal is we are the first resource to exist that talks on how to do magic that isn't just for men. We want to talk about doing it without a suit jacket and, your ability to do it in a dress. Or if there are plenty of men who don't want to wear a suit jacket and pants. And so we would talk about that too. But we also want to talk about, we talk about difficult stuff like sexual assault. That's pretty rampant in the community. We talk about why women are getting opportunities before they're ready and then quit 2 years later. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of things that we're talking about, but it really is centered around equality within the magic community. We're focused mainly on gender equality within magic because that's what the perspective that Carissa and I come from. But, we just had an episode with Jade, what a hero, and she talked about cultural appropriation and people who are not Asian doing Asian-themed acts and how that makes her feel and all of that. That was really an amazing episode that we haven't really touched upon that stuff yet. So it's important. We're talking about difficult things, and hopefully everyone's learning from it and just bettering, you know, people. If you ask just a normal person, especially in Los Angeles because of Magic Castle, if you ask a normal person, do they like magic? They might like magic, but they hate magicians. Mm-hmm. There have been interviews even on like Jimmy Kimmel where he's interviewed people and they're like, oh, you've been to the Magic Castle. And they're like, yeah, I hate magicians. They're creepy. And you're like, oh, yeah, okay, great. So part of that is we're just trying to make it so that magic isn't creepy anymore.
That's a funny perspective. Yeah. Interesting. Well, there's so much more that I'd like to talk about, but our time is tight right now. But again, it's S-H-E, Shezam, mm-hmm. Z-A-M, not M-M, but S-H-E-Z-A-M.
Yes. Yeah, Shezam. Yeah, Shezampod.com. You can find it on iTunes and all your favorite podcasts.
Wherever we get your podcasts.
Yay, podcasts.
But I'd like a little cross-pollination. I think it's important, you know, because, again, that this, as Eugene Berger said, it's a big house and a lot of rooms, you know, and everyone's welcome. And so, you know, please listen to Carissa and Kayla. So there she was. That's Kayla Drescher.
Thank you.
This is Scotty out. All right. Well, we just finished with an interesting conversation, or I guess a lecture. Cosmo Solano and Danny Archer talking about theaters or magic theaters. And people are always looking for different venues where they're going to be able to perform. And I thought I would talk with a couple of people who have performed in a lot of different venues. And I'd like to introduce you over here to Spencer Horstman. Hey, Spencer.
Hi, how are you?
And his wife, Caroline.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fantastic, thank you. You guys are looking good then, too. So you both have had different kind of venues you were working, because Spencer, we're going to get to you in just a minute about some of the things you've been working with, Chris Angel and other kinds of places. But also, Caroline, you've been working, then I know, with Rudy Kobe occasionally then, too.
Yes, I do occasionally work for Rudy Kobe. I've also worked for Fielding West. Mm-hmm. I've worked for a bunch of theaters all over the country, from Texas to Las Vegas to Los Angeles. So I've seen it all.
And Spencer, you were with Chris for a while, and
right. I toured with him for about a year in between, just kind of seasons at my bar and theater back home in Baltimore, which is my home base. That okay. Called Illusions Magic Bar. I've had that now for 13 years.
Really, and that's your place you own?
Yes, yeah. So Illusions, my family's magic shop, because we had taken over the Yogi Magic Bar from Phil Thomas in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. So originally, my father had Kenzo's Magic Bar, and then we did the continuation of the Yogi Magic Bar, and so then we went into business partners together. We designed, developed, and built a 110-seat theater and bar in Baltimore in that location. So coming up here in March, we'll be celebrating 13 years, and now we're looking to expand to a second location along the eastern seaboard here in the next 6 months.
Well, that's not something you normally hear, is a brick-and-mortar magic shop actually expanding and opening another location.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, we were all full-time performers, and the reason that we closed down the magic shop originally because we didn't want to deal with online sales. We wanted to strictly be a brick and mortar, but then we also decided, all right, we're getting a little bit tired of dealing with the retail end of it, magicians, because at the end of the day, we were live performers. We like performing for laymen, right. And thus, that's why we decided, okay, let's open up our venue. Right. And it's been primarily, we've opened it in the regards that it's my main. I am the main headliner, my wife and I now too, since we just got married. But we're the main headliners. When I'm out of town, then we'll bring in some other people to fill in some time, or if there's somebody passing through, have them do like a guest spot on the show. But again, we built it along the idea of, you know, Tom Mulica, you know, the style theater, where you're coming in just to see that one performer doing their unique style of magic.
Is a bar similar to Tomfoolery's?
So yes and no. We do have a full bar downstairs. We used to do shows in the middle of the bar, so that we have two massive rooms, and the one has a 45-foot bar with it that used to have a parlor stage in the middle of the bar itself, and kind of like Tom's originally, where we had seats at the bar and then we had tables and chairs behind that. That originally sat about 50 people. We had a back theater, we had a back lounge area that just used to be our garage, that when we had first opened a couple years of the bar, we just had as a pool table, lounge chairs, people go back there and hang out. But then we decided, all right, we wanted more space, so we flip-flopped everything, brought all the lounge chairs downstairs in the bar, and then we expanded to 110 seats with a full stage, backstage, whole nine yards into the back. Uh-huh. And we're full, again, beer, wine, liquor bar. We don't serve any food, and we're only open just primarily 2 days a week, Fridays and Saturdays. We do the other occasional Sunday matinee show, and then obviously because the unique aspect of the space itself and the show, we rent out buyouts for, you know, corporate events and weddings, right, and things of that nature. So yeah, so it's been nice. I know I mainly just travel because I want to travel somewhere, as I'm so used to touring and traveling. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, I go to a place, and yes, I've been to a lot of places, but I can't tell you anything about them because I never spent any more than 24 hours or 36 hours in that city.
I understand. Plus, you see the inside of a theater usually because you're rehearsing or getting, you know, exactly, checking the lights.
Theater, the inside of a hotel room, the inside of a car, and then
repeat.
Back on a plane. Yes.
Yep.
Rinse and repeat.
You know, yeah, whenever I ask performers who are touring like that, you know, what is your favorite place? Well, it's hard to say, you know, because right. I just go to the coffee shop and this. In fact, yeah, I was just talking with someone and said, I have actually gone into Starbucks saying, which city are we in?
Yeah. You have to find those mugs that say, what city am I in this eve? Or, yeah, you can figure it out that way.
One of the questions that was asked in there was about performing. And so do you have a lot of outside performers that come in for the weekends? It's all just local guys and you guys and the family?
Right, it's strictly just my wife and I. That's it. When we opened, obviously, we had a lot of people inquiring that, oh, are you going to hire local guys? Are you going to do all the, you can do open mics and things of that nature? I said, no, because I'm not just four-walling this space. Like, I own the property. I own the liquor license, which just liquor license alone cost me $100,000 before I could open doors and pour my first drink to start making a profit back.
How long did it take you to get that license? I'm just curious.
So in our neighborhood, it's a unique difficulty in regards to you can only buy a pre-existing license. So we waited around. We searched for probably about a year and a half, and we were able to buy a liquor license from a local business like 3 blocks further down the road that had closed down, and we transferred it to our location. And then we also had to go through the rigmarole of getting an entertainment license for our venue too, because that was an interesting, weird gray area in Baltimore City as well. So again, you also need to learn what your laws are, what your zonings are, things of that nature for your location with the show you want to do. It's not simply just having a show. Not to be blunt, but a lot of magicians are terrible businessmen. That's why you hire managers. That's why you hire agents, because they just got, I'm a good performer. Put me on stage. You can do whatever amount of time. But to actually, like, be responsible for knowing what, you know, cost is and, you know, your overhead and things of that nature, your profit and loss, they have no idea what that is. And right. So that in itself, it's, you know, show business. It's two words that people forget about.
Two-thirds of show business,
right,
is
as business. My father used to say, it's this oversimplification of it, but show business, there's more letters in business. Learn that.
Yeah.
Anybody can do the show. And so you have some magicians who are amazing performers but terrible businessmen, and then vice versa. You have some people who are brilliant businessmen, and their show is okay. And, you know, there's examples of that all over the place.
Right.
So it's a whole different animal than just going, oh, I can do a show. And then the other thing is, too, is that I've been approached over the years of having people come in, and they can only do 20 minutes. The show that I do, that my wife and I do, it's an hour and 45 minutes plus a 15-minute intermission. And it's also not a formal theater setting. It's not just this, you come in, you applaud at the right points, and that's it. Because we serve alcohol, that holds an entire different dynamic. So you typically have the energy of a comedy club there. You have people there in dates. You have bachelorette parties and bachelor parties. You have anniversaries. You have people there that are a little bit more loose. They don't want to see something as formal as like a theater magic show. So that energy in itself is too, which kind of puts all the performing style into being a comedy magician or something like that. You know, somebody coming with a very serious show manipulation act is not going to work. So right. You also have to weigh that. And again, I've had people approach me, magicians who I also highly respect, that I'm like, hey, you can come in and do a set, but I can't get you the whole 2 hours because you can't fill that time.
Yeah.
And so that becomes, you know, some people take offense to that. And then the people that recognize their skill, they understand that. But we had a big issue over the first couple years of the opening, and a lot of the locals just kind of talking crap about us because they're like, why won't you give us a space? I went, well, I put my money into it. I took out all these loans, and they're my name. If you want to buy me out, here are the keys. But until you take that risk,
right. That's
it. And it is a big risk. There's no guarantee, you know. But again, it's like any other business. You need to learn your business. You need to learn how to operate your business. You need to learn about the area you're moving into. You can't just be like, oh, this place has a room. I'm going to rent it out.
Yeah.
And if you build it, they will come. Ah,
maybe,
no.
Will they?
It's right.
You might get shut down for some ADA compliance issues.
Yeah. You know, right now we're in, a golden age of magic. A lot of things are happening right now, and that we are seeing more theaters being opened. And I've had a lot of people on the podcast who have said that they have opened their own little theaters performers like in their literally their backyard, yeah, you know, and other places around. So I think that they are just taking some of their business knowledge that they have, and then they're learning magic, or maybe it's vice versa. I'm not, you know, depending upon how they get into it. But my point is that I think we're starting to see more cities who are having these kinds of venues that are available.
Certainly. It is an intimate thing that you're offering. You know, it does beat out a big, you know, if you're depending, if you're not an illusionist, you know, everybody else really is a stand-up or close-up person. Mm-hmm. It does make it more intimate, and be able to provide intimate experiences to the general public is something that's becoming extremely popular. I mean, that's the whole concept of, you know, pop-ups and things of that nature. Sure. People want things that they can really kind of get deeply involved with on a personal level. You know, I'm there especially as the bar owner, as a business owner, you know, I'm there bartending before my show for about an hour and a half for along with a couple of other bartenders. Mm-hmm. And I do it because I'm OCD about my business. I want everything to run smoothly. So I see that, like, there's trash on the floor, if this or that, I will go over and take care of it. I'm not going to, like, go point to one of my bartenders and be like, you're the bartender, you go pick that up. No. Yeah, right. If the bathroom's clogged, guess what? I will go on there. I don't care if it's 30 seconds before I have to get on stage.
Yeah.
I'm going to fix the damn thing. And so people, they'll recognize that. And again, it creates more humility. It creates a genuine experience for people. I've had performers who come in and look at me and go, why are you bartending for the customers before the show? You're lowering yourself. And I'm like, no. I find the complete opposite. Every single review that we get, again, my wife is at the door. She's greeting guests. I'm there bartending. I would jump down to the intermission and bartend then, too.
People feel that intimacy.
Yeah.
And it endears you to your audience before you've even gone on stage. They're already rooting for you before they even know who you're the performer.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's kind of like whenever that I'm performing, like doing strolling, and then do the after the show mm-hmm. after dinner. Right. It's like they already know you, and they you know, and they're comfortable
they
coming up on stage.
They have an actual connection to you versus just this being a performer that's just up there doing, and they're completely separated from their audience.
Right. And another reason that we haven't brought in other magicians too heavily to do their own shows is because, like, I've built up my following and my clientele over the years, where they're coming in to see the unique, crazy, weird crap that I do. Mm-hmm. So it's better, you know, if we have people guest spot. Great, that's fantastic, because then they also trust, like, oh, okay, he trusts this person to come in enough to do a part in his show, so then we like them too. So that helps. So we found that it gets better to have a combination show of whoever it is, you know, that her and I perform with that we bring in for, you know, half of the show. Or, you know.
Well, we're bringing in Eric Dittleman in February on February 16th to do a Valentine's Day show, but it will be in conjunction with us. So, yeah.
Yeah, we recently had our New Year's Eve show, and we had Alon New from DC come in, and he did the first half of the show. We did the second half of the show.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You know, so we found that also has worked better. And then, again, we do host the occasional just completely off-the-wall variety shows. So we've done slideshows there, variety shows, burlesque shows. Mm-hmm. But even then, we still do spots in the show to still, again, remind people, hey, it's welcome to our place. Yeah. We are hosting this group here.
Yeah.
You know, there's still, and again, it comes down to branding. It depends on how you're looking to brand this. You know?
Well, Joel Givens does a similar thing. He and Carol Massey, you know, are in Castle Rock, Colorado, in which that same thing. If you're going to be coming in, he's going to book your show. You've got to do, like, 90 minutes. And if you can't, then, you know, if you can only do part of that, you know, then I'll be doing my show and then, you know, fill in like that, because, again, it's my theater. But I prefer that it kind of be all of yours. But it needs to be strong, obviously, for the whole time, too. But if you only have 45 minutes, then, you know, it's a good, strong 45 minutes, then he possibly will consider booking you. And then he and Carol finish the other, you know, last 45.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that makes perfect sense, certainly, that way. How are you enjoying the convention, you guys?
Oh, great.
I've been doing SAM for like 8 years, so it's great to be back here. It was the last time it was in Vegas, and it was right after I just did America's Got Talent. Mm-hmm. The first time around, I came out to this one. And then, yeah, now it's convenient because I was on there now just last week again, and then back out to this one. So it's a timing
point. Yeah, it's been good. We're working really hard to get this other project up off the ground, so this is kind of like our last foray into the world before we have to, like,
for the next year until we're just buried in work and don't sleep and eat.
So it's a nice way to actually connect with humans before we disappear from humans.
I remember, well, you know, watching America's Got Talent, in which that you had, that was part of the celebrity group, was it Fans or something?
Well,
Appreciation
Champions.
Champions.
Season,
correct. Right. Exactly. So it being brought back as a return competitor.
Right. Yep. And that you had injured your head.
Yes, it's always a head injury, constantly falling on my head, getting hit in the head with crap. So I shaved all my hair off, and now I'm impatiently growing it all back.
Well, that made for good TV, though.
Absolutely.
So that way that when you would bow down, you can kind of see that.
They were upset that I didn't have the accident on film when it happened.
Wow.
So I was like, look, I'll at least shave my head for you. Oh, really? Okay, sure. Well, yay, reality TV. But again, still great press, you know, and that's the thing is, like, you know, my main show that I do back home, most people know me nowadays as an escape artist because of America's Got Talent, because of touring with Chris Angel, but like, my main bread and butter is sleight of hand stand-up comedy magic.
Really?
But either way,
I
they
think
both,
as
so
escape.
Right, so that's exactly the thing. It's funny, like, when I walk around here, people are like, oh, okay, I'm not going to show him a card trick because he just escapes.
He's going to be in
the
water.
He doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. So it's actually, it's an interesting freeing thing to kind of have both personas going on there. Mm-hmm. But my main show, like I said, you know, I only end the show with an escape. That's it. I mean, mean, an entire hour and a half, hour 45 minute show of escapes would be boring as hell, and I don't know anybody that could pull that off sufficiently. And so it would, you know, this is, you know, either way, any sort of press helps. And again, it doesn't matter if you're trying to sell tickets for a touring show or if you're on theater, you know, get that press out there. I hate doing TV, but I still do it every couple years just because it keeps the name out there.
Well, you got to keep relevant. That's true. Exactly. I'm sure that Rudy was excited to have you come back then as well and reprise your role as well, Nikki Terminator.
So I actually, I wasn't the Nikki Terminator in the show this week. I was just in the lecture. So I was his assistant for when I was living in Los Angeles for, it was like a 2 year. We did a few castle runs together. I was invited to go to China. It didn't end up panning out with him. But yeah, so when I got here, we texted Rudy and I was like, oh, I'm here. And he's like, did you bring your costumes by any chance? He's like, no. Why would I do that?
We travel with them all the time.
Yes, I carry around my Mrs. Modern dress with me. It's very near and dear to my heart.
Exactly. We role play it.
Yes, it's fun. It's fun. So I wasn't.
That's why you married her.
Yeah.
Spicy redhead.
I made the joke the other day. I was like, the only reason that Spencer married me is one of our first conversations. Is like, oh, yeah, I assist Rudy Kobe. And he's see the childhood wet dream just kind of appear. Sorry, excuse me.
Rudy is a massive. Influence and just one of my favorite magicians growing up as a kid.
But he's always fun to work with. He will, like, for any situation, he'll just throw you into it and just be like, go, do it, have fun. And I think working with Rudy is one of those, is probably one of the best experiences I had, and that it trained me to really just be prepared to do anything at any time and just kind of roll with whatever's going to happen.
You know, not every performer's like that gives their assistants, if you will, free range. You know, it's basically you're going to stand here, do this, and hold your head or hand like this.
He really lets you create a character. And I think what's fun with Rudy's show is it's not about being the sexy assistant. It's about creating this kind of, it's creating a comic book character on stage. And that's not always going to be the sexy assistant in the bikini or whatever. It's going to be like, this person's a little crazy. What is she doing? Why is she doing this? So I've enjoyed that kind of
thing. So you develop your own character basically out of that. I mean, well, he gave you the costume and you kind of took off from there, or?
Yes and no. So the first run I was doing, the first time I worked with Rudy, I did a very traditional version of the Ms. Modern character, which was, has been done for years. It was one of his first pieces that he had an assistant do with him. So it's just very much this kind of housewife showing you an infomercial. And as that particular run went on, my housewife started getting like cracks in her little skull kind of seemed. So she would get a little bit louder, a little bit crazier, a little bit like more aggressive with throwing Rudy in the box. The second time I did that that character with Rudy, we were doing the Halloween week at the Magic Castle. And I was like, well, how do we make this creepy? Can I be a zombie? And he's like, yeah, sure. So, like, the curtain's open, and I'm chewing on one of the four legs, and, like, I've smeared the box with blood. And I just went completely off the walls for that one, and it was probably the most fun I've ever had on stage. But once again, not being the pretty girl on stage really lets you be free. You can do whatever.
As I recall, Caroline comes from a formal acting background. Yeah. So she was an actor first before getting into magic 10 years ago.
My background is in classical theater. So I did a lot of Shakespeare, Moliere. I did some Greek comedies as well. So that's where I come from as a performer. Like, I come into these things as from these stock characters, the Commedia dell'arte characters, and how do we play with them from there?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, I think that I'm glad you had a great time at the convention. You say you don't attend very often.
I've been doing SAM for a while. Over the years now, I've just been attending the Magic Lives and things of that nature.
Yep, that's right. I've seen you over there.
Yep, yeah. Exactly.
Well, good. Thank you very much for your time. Appreciate you guys being here. And we'll chat longer later. And so way that the rest of the listeners can, you know, delve into your lives a little bit more as well. And anyhow, so thanks a lot. Hope you enjoy the rest of the convention then this evening.
Thank you.
And sort of the Magic Word Podcast. That was Spencer Horseman and his wife, Caroline. Scotty out. All right, now I'm here with one of the people who was in the auditions for the Penn & Teller Fool Us yesterday, Katrina Crutch. Hey, Katrina.
Hi, Scott.
Good to have you back over here on the podcast then again. Since
Thank
last
you.
November, I guess it was, when we were
At
the Orlando convention over there. And how have things been going since then?
Oh, really great. I just got back from Africa with Magicians Without Borders, doing a tour all over South Africa, and like 2 days ago. It was very exciting. My car died, so I took the bus straight here, and I haven't really slept in the last month, but it's been really rewarding and amazing.
Your car died, so it's being repaired. You're in L.A.,
it's
right?
It's being prepared in L.A., yeah.
So, yeah, because whenever I saw you here, I thought, yeah, you're supposed to be in South Africa. You've been posting all these pictures on Instagram of all these amazing animals that some of you hadn't seen or heard of before, even.
Yeah, yeah. I wish I could remember the names, but I don't.
Now, was Magicians Without Borders, that was that like a tour or something? And were there other magicians? Tell me something about that.
Yeah, there was about like 10 or 12 different magicians. Mm-hmm. And we toured all over South Africa to different schools and orphanages and AIDS homes. And we went to cancer wards and hospitals and all sorts of really, really amazing places where they don't have a lot of access to magic and things like that. And it was really, really wonderful. Like, I don't usually get to perform for children like that. I'm always doing, you know, like most of your listeners. Well, I actually don't do princess parties that much in the last year or two. I've found that selling my show as me and, like, teaching little girls magic with my magic kits has a higher ceiling of what I can charge.
Sure.
And it's also a lot more rewarding than being a princess, because I feel like princess is kind of being part of the patriarchy, but like now my show is more like, yeah, like women power and yeah. And boy power. Sometimes I do boy birthday parties, but what was I saying? Oh, but they're usually, you know, kind of well-off families in, right. You know, Silicon Valley or Malibu or whatever. So it was really, really cool being able to do it for children that really, really appreciated it and don't often get that type of an experience.
Kind of open your eyes to something you hadn't seen before.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. And, like, for one of the shows we did in this, it wasn't a hospital, but it was, like, the children that were in the hospital and need regular care but don't have enough to be able to be in the hospital 24/7. And it was, like, a children's home. And we were doing it for, like, you know, children with, like, in wheelchairs and heavy burns and all sorts of things. And it was just really, really powerful, like, doing the same tricks with children that had, you know, disabilities and things. And seeing that, you know, because there were times when I was like, oh, maybe I shouldn't pick that person because they don't have fingers. But then just, like, treating them like anyone else, you know, mostly because I didn't have alternative patter that I prepared, but also just because I was like, you know what, like, I'm just going to do this with this kid and make them feel special and make them the hero, and was really powerful, and these children just, like, lit up, and it was, like, such a life-changing experience for them, just getting treated normal and getting to experience, like, something the way that a normal kid would get to experience it.
Had you worked in hospitals or done some children's wards and things in the past leading up to that, or was that your first experience?
I'd done some hospitals in Los Angeles, but it wasn't quite the same. Like, it was, you know,
yeah, nothing could really prepare you for that, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah.
Except for vaccinations, was I sure that you had to get some vaccinations to go down there?
Actually, I was surprised. You didn't really need much. I had an emergency meeting with my doctor right before, and I was so stressed out. I was like, am I going to get malaria or typhoid or die? And, you know, I have Medi-Cal because I am self-employed, so I don't have fancy insurance because I'm an artist. And my doctor, I got in with her in the room, and she said, oh, yeah, I did a safari, and you don't need anything. And I was like, then why am I here? Because she had me come in. I left a voicemail, and she was like, oh, yeah, come in today. And then she, like, spent 30 minutes telling me about her safari and how she didn't get any shots, but how I'd be fine. And I was like, oh, great.
And then telling you what else you should go and see and do while you're there.
And
kind of sharing her experience.
She prescribed me, like, some antibiotics in case I ate something that made me have a funny stomach, but she didn't. It was like I got called in, and then she said, oh, yeah, I went, and I didn't need anything in Cape Town. Because South Africa's, you know, been colonized, and it's very, very, like, modern. Mm-hmm. The place we were in was in a hostel in Cape Town, and we were only, like, a 10-minute walk from, like, the mall that had Gucci and, like, a fancy Ferris wheel, and they had, like, a wharf and a pier.
So you were going to, like, tribal areas.
No, it wasn't anything like Lisa Mena does with
the
tribes.
That's what I was wondering,
But I did, what they would do is they'd pick us up at like 6 a.m. and they'd be like, okay, here are the two or three shows we have today. And then we'd be in the car for like 2 or 3 hours and go out of Cape Town into like the townships where the poor people were, you know, and townships is what like basically like ghettos. And they would have like homes made of like tin, like scraps of metal that you would see.
You just washed ashore that I happened to find, kind of putting things, slapping
them
together.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't by the beach.
Okay.
But washed not washed ashore, but yeah, these, and there was just miles and miles and miles of these townships that were just like the most, I don't want to say sad, but they would just be like pieces of thin wood. And I remember talking to like cab drivers when I was there, and they were like, yeah, I grew up in one, and like when it's hot, you don't have air conditioning, and when it rains, it leaks, and it's just, I mean, fortunately, it's a warmer climate, right? It's not like Canada. But it's pretty sad that some of those places. It was interesting, though. Like, all of them had dishes, like satellite dishes. So they're like...
That's what television says.
We don't have AC. We don't have this, but we have cable.
We have cable. That's funny. It's funny. I wanted to also follow up with you, since we last talked, that you were working with Penn on Sage and Piff way back when, you know, and that... that he had referred to you in that particular situation on his Penn Sunday School.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Then too.
That was a huge honor.
Which was pretty cool, you know, listening to that, in which he was saying that, you know, that he would take a bullet for you because, you know, that you were the person who said that I'm really here to learn comedy, you know, and I'll do anything, you know, for a comedy, for the bit, you know, commit to the bit kind of a thing. Since that, has that done anything for you? I mean, career-wise, I mean, it's a small magic world, but have other people, other magicians, talk to you about all that?
Yeah, a little bit. It was a huge honor to be referred to on his podcast. Like, that was really, really amazing. And, and I mean, I think he hit it on the nose. I have only been doing close-up magic for, like, 3 years, so my technical abilities is, like, that of a toddler. But I come from, like, a comedy and theatrical background. I went to clown school. I've studied stand-up at Flappers and Laugh Factory and done Groundlings and Second City. Those are all improv, like, Saturday Night Live people things. And so that's, like, my passion, and what I love to bring into magic is, like, is all that. So it just was, like, really flattering that he recognized that, and I hadn't even realized if he'd heard me, but I do remember that moment on stage, so I was like, oh wow, I'm glad that meant as much to him as it meant to me. He's a really wonderful, and I've been emailing him, and he's just really wonderful and professional.
That's
and
great.
And I said, hey, like, thank you so much for writing that, is it okay if I use it as a quote? And he was like, yeah, sure, want me to write something? And I was like, oh gosh, I don't know, just something like what you said. And then he wrote like the most amazing thing that was unnecessary and very kind, and something about like how he'd go to into showbiz battle with me, and just so, and it's amazing. It's like on the front page of my website now because it's a really good quote.
Are you still studying comedy and kind of going in that direction?
I like magic. Magic's my passion. I love it. Like, I wish I'd found it sooner when I was younger, but I love putting comedy into my magic, and I just completed Intermediate Groundlings. I don't know if you know what Groundlings
is.
But it's really aggressive. Like, they don't let you pass. You have to come in, Intermediates, the final is you have to come in with five different characters that have five different points of view about the world, like hard points of view. Five different voices, like vocal range, accents, everything, the way that they stand has to be different, their body, like every detail of this character has to be different. You have to come up with five different people, and it's called Five Through the Door. Anyway, it was very stressful, and I did it, and I passed, and I'm very excited. So I plan on doing Advanced Groundlings when I'm back in L.A.
That's great.
And
I was going to ask you just quickly as we wrap up over here about the convention, since you're here at the SAM convention. Have you competed? I don't know. Don't have competitions here. Do they have competitions at SAM? Okay.
They had a close-up competition, which I think I emailed about, like, I don't know, 8 months ago or something, because I really learned a lot and had a great experience at IBM doing the close-up contest. And they got back to me, and I was on standby for a while, and then I found out a bit last minute that I was going to be doing it, and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm doing it. And then I found out that it wasn't a contest, it was a Fool Us audition.
Yeah.
And I have nothing fooling at all. And I pretty much just have a few basic things. And so I was like, I don't know if I should do it. And my friend convinced me. They're like, hey, they want performance and character. And if you're good at that, then they'll work with you. And so I did Triumph, which I almost feel like it was insulting to do Triumph as a Fool Us thing. But they really liked me. And they said kind of the same things Penn said. They had a feedback session, and they said they really liked my writing, and they thought I was quick and good at improv, and that was like a huge honor, yeah, to hear that. And they said they want to work with me and maybe have me on the show. So, but they don't want me to do cards. No cards. Too many cards.
Well, as you said, only 25%. Well, only as a quarter of the tricks are card tricks that they do. You know, there. Well, that was kind of cool. That's why I wanted to ask you then briefly, I guess, about that experience. You know, and kind of auditioning. So really, you didn't know until later that you were going to be auditioning.
Oh, yeah. And then I thought it was just going to be for the producers. And I thought, that's okay. Like, they know about magic, but they're not going to judge me too much for doing Triumph because they're producers. They want entertainment. And then, Saturday, I found out that we're doing it in front of the entire convention. And I thought, oh, gosh, okay, all these people that are not my peers, they're better than me. And I'm going to do, and I'm going to walk on stage and go, I'm doing Triumph to fool you. And I just was like, oh, gosh, I'm not. I try not to be that arrogant. I was like, oh, gosh, I hope people don't think I'm really trying to fool people with Triumph. But I think it went well. People laughed.
For the right place? Good.
Yeah, and I made up some lines that I would not normally say for laymen. But, I did the reveal, and I was like, wouldn't this be amazing if this was Spencer's card? And everyone was like, yeah. And I said, okay, guys, pretend you've never seen Triumph before. And that got, the biggest laugh because, you got to play to your audience.
Sure.
So I'm really excited. I have, a month to send them videos of everything I do that's not cards. And hopefully I can get on this season.
Well, we hope to see you there. Good luck with that.
And
good seeing you at this convention, as always. I'm looking forward to the next time we get together and perhaps have a martini with some other folks then, too, so we can get together. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Good luck, as I said, with that and with future auditions. And also, I think that is tremendous, talking about the Magicians Without Borders kind of a thing. So thanks for sharing that.
Everyone who can do Magicians Without Borders should do it. It was rewarding. It was amazing.
How'd you sign up for that, or how'd you get connected?
How could people do
that?
Well, Jen Kramer told me about it, and she connected me with Carlos and Tom Werner, who started the organization. But you can also go to magicianswithoutborders.com, and there's a form to fill out to get contacted for when they have the next trip. But they have multiple service trips. It's a really wonderful, rewarding experience. I highly, highly, highly recommend it.
Great. There you go. Right from the mouth there of Katrina Crutch. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. For the Magic Word Podcast, Scotty out. Well, we're putting a wrap on the convention. We just finished the Chinese show with some Chinese, I guess, acrobats. What would you call the troupe? It was a Chinese troupe, basically.
Right.
That Julianne Chen had helped put together. I can't pronounce many of their names, but Ding Yang, I know, opened the show, and she was a highlight from last year's Magic Live as well. But some of you who were there might remember she was the one who was producing doves with her feet. She's just amazing. You got the first standing ovation and several follows throughout the season. It was fantastic. A great way to finish the convention. When I say finish, actually, they were having a farewell celebration. I'm here with one of the people that is involved with making this thing all come together. And I say one of, because he is just the convention chairman, Mark Whitehouse. Hey, Mark.
Hi, Scott. It's good to see you.
And you too. And probably even better, because now you can take a breath.
It's finally there. It's been a roller coaster ride, and we're finally at the end.
And so you're going to sleep when you get home, I guess. Still got some more things to do a little bit tonight to wrap.
You know, it's been about a week since I've had sleep. So, yeah, I think I'm going to rest a little bit. Then I'm going to go to Blackpool. So,
are you? Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to go to Blackpool. We're still looking for Axe and Hallett. And,
for 2 years from now.
2 years from now, yeah. Yeah.
Which is the next thing. And we'll talk about that a little bit. I've talked with some other people already, but... It's going to be in January 16th through 18th?
Correct. It's the same Martin Luther King weekend. We talked with the people at Magi Fest to make sure that we're not conflicting with them. They're a couple weeks after us that year. So
that's not going to be until 2022.
We're going to give my team a little rest. I've got to thank my team. It's a marvelous group of people. From registration, my wife Ann Whitehouse and the Wachowiaks that have been helping out at registration. They're probably one of the toughest jobs. We've got Dan Rodriguez working in the dealer room. We have Mano Rodriguez, the SAM National Administrator. She's our person who takes care of our banquet and all the other loose ends. We have people working security. Arlen Solomon helps out with that and also with the youth program. The Stars of Tomorrow, both the close-up and the stage show. I've got Brad Jacobs, who's just doing great as our treasurer. I've got David Goodsell, our MUM editor emeritus, He produces our program every year and does just, it was a phenomenon. Did you get a chance to peruse the magazine? It has so much history about Las Vegas.
I haven't yet. I just briefly perused it, but I really haven't had a chance to dig into it. But I did see it had the history of the magazine.
Yep, great stuff. And then we're called the Three Amigos, but I've got my my buddy Mike Miller from Philadelphia. He's our show producer and just does a phenomenal job. And this year he really knocked it out of the park with the talent that he's had here. And our help, my assistant, Vinny Grasso, he just did such a great job with coming up with the program for the roast last night. Amazing. Wow. That, I mean, that's history. People are going to be talking for what happened last night for years to come. Yeah. And and tonight, the gold medal Magic of China show, that's just the way to end the party.
I think so as well. What was the most challenging part of putting this whole thing together, or once it got together, that you had a little, maybe a rough patch or something? I mean, what did you feel like was a challenge? Programming or?
Well, you know, we had a challenge right in the very beginning with the timing of the convention. Because you know, we're a family, we're a magic family. We work together, and a number of years that we've had this contract with the Golden Nugget to be here, and we coordinated it with Stan Allen, and because he was doing his Magic Live every other year, and we wanted to make sure we weren't in competition with him, so we came up with a time in the summer when we could be here when he wasn't having Magic Live, and Stan called us and said, "Hey, I'm not going to continue the magazine, and I promise this." And he was very gracious. He was able to financially support us to come up with a solution, and the solution was to move it to January. And, you know, January in Las Vegas, the weather's really not that bad.
No, in fact, I even took the very first day I went up into the mountains to, I didn't go skiing, but I, you know, saw some snow, and it was really nice up there.
Yeah.
Only about an hour's drive to think. I didn't know you could go to ski in Vegas. That's cool.
Yep. So Stan was great to help us out, and I'm pleased with this. A lot of people are saying they really enjoy the January. Some people have never been to an SAM convention because for a national convention to be during the summertime means the people who are working the library shows and things, they can't get away. So January is an interesting time to do it.
You know, aside from you, Mark, as being one of the hardest working guys behind the scene, one of the hardest working guys in front of the scenes had to be Harrison Greenbaum. He was everywhere doing everything, and he was fantastic.
He was a star.
Yeah.
He was a star. And he volunteered to add in a bonus lecture today.
Yeah.
I didn't get to see it. Did you?
I did.
Yeah, was it good?
Free lecture notes, by the way, that he gave us online. Here's the URL.
And I was busy running the convention, so I'll have to see if I can get some notes from somebody else. But, he really was a star. And then tonight, that was fun. We had a little. Vinny Grasso was our MC, and there was a little pause there. He needed a little extra filler, and so we had Chris Kenner and Harrison Greenbaum come up. And as I understand it, Chris Kenner said he was going to pay Vinny $1,000 if he would let him come up on stage. So I'll have to talk to Vinny, make sure that goes into the convention treasure.
The treasure. That's right.
Thanks, Chris.
Yes, thanks, Chris. And thanks, Harrison, also, because, again, you know, he did so much, you know, in the evening and, you know, at night, and, you know, the late night show and the other lectures and everything he did. Yeah, it was, everybody really pitched in. I mean, really, it shows what a family this is, you know.
Yep, very much so.
So, good job, I would say. And so, to you and, of course, Steve Spence, I spoke to this morning, and there are a lot of things that the SAM has been doing right. And I was speaking with someone from the board, in fact, from the IBM, said, why don't we do this kind of a thing? Why don't we do this or that? These guys are really knocking it out of the park, you know, but it's really well put together.
Well, thank you. I'm, you know, like I said, I think we made some history this convention. And hopefully, you know, in 2 years, we're going to make it even more spectacular. And, you know, hopefully people will be here and help support us.
Yeah, so. I think so. Thanks a lot, Mark.
Who do you think we should roast?
Well, if amazing Jonathan is still alive.
That was the running gag, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. That could be a good one.
Yeah. Yes, definitely.
So the Magic Word Podcast, this may be a wrap for tonight, I think, for the convention. That's Mark Whitehouse. This is Scotty out.
From Las Vegas.
All right, well, we're at the after party, and everything is kind of wrapping up. And I had mentioned earlier about how that Harrison Greenbaum had been the most busiest man, person in this whole convention.
They really got their money's worth.
They got more than, and they only paid you $500, so it's actually a deal. You know?
Wait, that's what they're paying? Oh, no.
They're actually paying?
I got to go find them.
But you really were working, so anyhow, I got Harrison Greenbaum with me. It's kind of a... kind of a coda or an epilogue at the end of this at the end of the story, the last guy I'm going to talk to before we sign out, but I just want to thank you so very much for making this a great convention, because you were part of the family, it seems like. It's like, whatever you want, yeah, I'll do that, I'll come and do that. Even this evening, coming up and helping, you know, with...
Oh, yeah, that was super unexpected. Yeah, Vinny was like, Chris Kenner, Harrison Greenbaum, come fill. I was like, all right, I'm here. Now I'm in the China show.
Yeah, exactly. Now you're in the China show, that's right.
Yeah.
Put that on your resume.
Yeah, I never thought I'd be part of the aromatic golden chrysanthemum magic show.
Was that what it was? That was interesting. Whenever they put up that marquee, you know, and the guy was speaking in Chinese as they were kind of giving an intro before the thing began.
Right.
And it's like, but the funny thing was about how that they were interpreting Chinese to English, the translation on the screen, even
right.
They hadn't even done that properly.
You know, I couldn't tell you, I don't speak Chinese.
Okay. No,
but I assume.
But well, I'm saying as far as the English translation, one like and unique, you know, because you usually have and before a vowel, you know.
Right.
But so they thought, okay, there's a vowel, so it's supposed to be and. So it's a unique opportunity.
Gotcha.
It's an and, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, it was an unique show for sure.
It was an unique show. What did you think about your experience about being here?
It was wild.
Yes.
I knew coming in that I was doing my late night uncensored adults only show. I had a spot on the comedy cabaret gala show. I found out 20 minutes before the roast got underway that I was in the roast.
Now, that is serious. I mean, you really were just 20 minutes.
I really found out about 15, 20 minutes. Matt came over and was like, do you want to do it? I was like, hell yeah. And I was furiously typing on my laptop during the 20 minutes I had. And then when the roast started, I was stage left. I had to move further stage left at one point because my laptop started to die.
I have to say that you then are the most creative person, because all of those were just tremendous. Were you the one who talked about the bomb? No, somebody else had said about...
Yes.
No, I think I was...
Oh, that was Amazing Jonathan had to joke about the bomb,
said, yeah, if a bomb fell on this place, it would be a waste of a bomb.
Right, exactly.
But the lines and things that you had said, I mean, that they were very funny, and the fact that you only took just 20 minutes to write all that.
It was one of the biggest comedy challenges I've ever faced. But it was also surreal. Like, I grew up, you know, loving Mac and Amazing Jonathan, all these people, Penn Jillette. Yeah. So to be part of it was such a crazy thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's really great. And thank you very much again for making this such a great convention over here.
Thank you.
I look forward sometime to be able to actually spend some time.
Let's hang. I'm going to send you some head.
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
So the Magic Word Podcast, that was Harrison Greenbaum. Which, by the way, you had done a podcast, you said, earlier today with...
I did Ice Cream Social with Matt Donnelly. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So be sure and tune into that one to hear him.
Absolutely. Follow me on the Twitter and Instagram at Harrison Comedy.
There you go, man.
Yeah.
The Magic Word Podcast.
Now we're going to get drunk at this club.
Just have a martini.
Popping bottles.
Scotty out. Yeah.